This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. As the forces of a whirlwind uprising approached Port-au-Prince yesterday, Haitian President Jean-Bertrand Aristide left the capital aboard an American jet. From exile in the Central African Republic, the deposed president declared that his opponents had cut down the tree of peace, but that it would grow again. Under the Haitian Constitution, Aristide's resignation left the office of president to Alexandre Boniface, the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. But at this point, it's far from clear that all sides are ready to accept the transfer of power. Hundreds of United States Marines and French troops took control of some key facilities in the capital today, and some of the rebel militia arrived in the city as well. Clearly, public order is the first priority, with humanitarian aid a close second. But in the longer term, what does Haiti need? Can a government of national unity establish legitimate authority? What civil and political institutions need to be built? What of the ruined economy? Later in the program, we'll look at the proposed interim constitution in another rebuilding country, Iraq, and we'll read from your letters. But first, Haiti. If you have questions about what needs to be done now, our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us now for an update on the situation in Haiti is NPR correspondent Jerry Haddon. He joins us on the phone from Port-au-Prince, and good to have you on Talk of the Nation, Jerry.
Hello, Neil.
Can you tell us what the situation is right there today, right now?
I've spent the morning down in front of the National Palace. People were expecting the rebels from the north of Haiti, led by Guy Philippe, to come into the city at some point. And in fact, they did sometime around 9 this morning. Before that, there were hundreds of Haitians gathered in front of the palace waiting, and some U.S. Marines appeared on the stairs of the palace. The Haitians crowded up against the front of the fence about 100 yards away, watching curiously. And then when the rebels arrived sometime later in a convoy of trucks, on top of the trucks, hanging out of the trucks with their arms clearly visible, the crowd just went crazy, cheering Guy Philippe's name, that he was saving the country from Aristide, and much celebrating happening in the streets.
Is that celebration universal in Port-au-Prince?
Well, the situation is so hot in Haiti right now that, you know, normal Haitians wake up in the morning and, depending on whether or not their leader is in control, they'll come out into the streets or not. Today, clearly, the Marines, 200 Marines, landed last night. They were visible at the palace, and with the rebels moving in, Aristide supporters obviously were nowhere in sight. So talking to people on the street, everyone was happy. However, 2 days ago, before Aristide left, there was a giant march of pro-Aristide people in the streets, alleging that it was unfair that diplomatic pressure, the United States and France, were trying to force their president out.
Is there looting going on? Are the streets safe? Or are they quiet?
There apparently is looting still going on. It was a very tough weekend. The head of the Chamber of Commerce here was on the radio just a few minutes ago saying that there were just millions of dollars in damage to stores, banks, gas stations, private homes in downtown Port-au-Prince. The city was in many places in complete chaos on the weekend. Houses burning, banks being looted, and so forth. Thousands wandering around with gasoline, trying to light various places on fire. Apparently, it's still happening today. There's smoke above the city, and one of the leaders, one of the political opponents of President Aristide, not part of the rebel faction, was on the radio, in fact, asking the rebels to please come down into the city and to assist the police in stopping the looters. That is quite a dramatic break from the political distance that the Aristide opponents in the capital had been maintaining between themselves and the armed rebels.
As we mentioned just a moment ago, there is a new president, at least in name. Is there any indication that he is in charge?
He's in charge according to the Constitution, but really the place is in a state of flux. It's clearly the U.S. Marines that are in charge of the National Palace, and there are several closed-door meetings going on right now between the political opponents of Aristide, meeting with the U.S. officials, the rebels meeting with the political opponents and so forth, and we're all still waiting to see what their final declaration is going to be, what the political opponents will agree to in terms of moving the country forward, what the rebels will agree to, and what the international community still has to say.
You mentioned before President Aristide's supporters a few days ago before his departure, certainly mentioning how unfair it was that they thought he was being pressured to leave by the United States and by France. According to third-person accounts today, President Aristide is telling his supporters in the United States and elsewhere that he did not leave by choice. What are you hearing about those allegations there in Port-au-Prince?
They're just reaching here. What's being said in the U.S. is making it back into Haiti via Radio Metropole, which is one of the main radio stations here. And so far, there hasn't been any response from the major political actors on the street today. Again, basically filled with just Aristide's opponents, they were saying to us, we don't really care how Aristide left. He needed to leave for the peace of the country. So the greater good has been done, and let's move on with things. But yesterday, I should tell you, when news hit that Aristide had left, his supporters were rampaging through the streets, saying that he'd been kidnapped, that he had been handcuffed and forcibly taken from the country, and that President George Bush was a terrorist and so forth. Extremely angry and believing that, in fact, he had been forced out of the country.
The White House spokesman today, Scott McClellan, asked questions about whether the United States had forced President Aristide to leave, replied that that was utter nonsense, and he denied that. Looking ahead, though, as you talk to Haitians there, Jerry, what do they say that they need to do in the immediate future to get things back to normal and then start rebuilding Haiti once again?
Most immediately, stop the looting, disarm the pockets of Aristide supporters that are still entrenched in various poor, tough neighborhoods of the capital. There was some intense fighting early in the morning as we were waiting for the rebels to arrive. We were in front of the palace, and just a few blocks away, we could hear a lot of gunfire and some reporters, some photographers that were coming from that neighborhood told us that a couple of Haitian police had actually been killed and been beaten back by the Aristide supporters, known as Chimère, because the police had simply run out of ammunition and they had regrouped back at the police headquarters. So, number one is to bring the political violence to an end. And then, to name this interim government, which will have three people at the head of it, and someone from the Lavalas party, that's Aristide's group, somebody from the opposition, and someone from the international community.
Jerry, thanks very much.
Thank you, Neil.
NPR correspondent Jerry Haddon joined us on the line from Port-au-Prince in Haiti. Many people point to Haiti as the latest example of a failed state. Thomas Carruthers joined us now to help us understand what that means and what Haiti needs to do to get beyond that. Thomas Carruthers is director of the Democracy and the Rule of Law Project at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, and he's with us here in Studio 3A, and it's good to have you on Talk of the Nation.
Good afternoon, Neil.
What does it mean when a state fails?
Basically, what it means is a society no longer has any basic capacity of the state. They don't have forces of order. They don't have the ability to deliver basic services to people. They don't have a government which really functions. And so the country's hitting bottom, running on empty, and citizens are, in a sense, on their own and cut off from any civilized means of keeping a society going and moving it forward.
Once a country has failed, is it seemingly doomed to perpetual failure?
It's very hard to rebuild a country where the state institutions have genuinely failed, but it's not impossible. Some African countries have started to get back on their feet after traumatic periods, like in Rwanda after the genocide there and some other places. But it's really hard. Because establishing a working civil service, ministries that actually function, a police force that really does its duty, and these other things, these take a lot of time, a lot of patience, and a lot of, you know, genuine leadership, which usually is very hard to find in a situation like this.
And they require, if not consensus, at least a generalized belief that these institutions are more or less neutral or on everybody's side, or at least on the side of the majority.
Absolutely. And Haiti is an extremely fractured society politically. It has been, in a sense, in many ways throughout its history, unfortunately, torn between a small mulatto elite, which is somewhat more light-skinned, and the economic elite of the country, and a large black population, which has felt aggrieved for many decades. So it's a divided society in many ways, but the political division in the last 10 years has just been ferocious. And this is a country where people line up on one side or the other and don't work productively together, blame each other for things. We're seeing this now with what Aristide is saying today. This typical tendency on the part of one side to blame the United States for this must be somebody else's fault, as opposed to trying to take responsibility, build a consensus at home.
When you say a line up on one side or another, is this the typical, what we would think of as left-right? What's the divide?
Well, I mean, the divide was really between the elite and the masses to some extent, and Aristide tried to represent these masses, but then he began to lose them through his misrule in the 1990s, and the society was not divided simply in terms of an elite and the masses. He started as a man of the grassroots, a people's visionary to some extent, but he lost that throughout the 1990s, and now you see the society divided somewhat more, not equally, but some more in a more complex way, with people on the anti-Aristide side who were once his supporters.
Is democracy, I mean, there was a Mr. Aristide's election was hailed as the first real democratic election in the history of Haiti. Is this fundamental to the establishment of a legitimate government, do you think?
Yes, I think it's fundamental, but what we have to be careful of is rushing back into elections. This is one lesson I think the international community has learned in some other places, like Bosnia, for example, and we're learning it in Afghanistan and Iraq, is when a country goes through severe conflict and you want to rebuild the country in a democratic way, yes, elections are going to be essential to that process, to getting legitimacy of the government, but it doesn't mean you need to do them 3 months or 6 months after the conflict stops. What you need in Haiti is a cooling off period, building an interim government that has some real consensus and participation from different sectors of the society, and then moving gradually and deliberately toward an electoral process that people can believe in. This tendency of Aristide's out, let's get a new guy in charge, have elections, and then walk away again would be a big mistake on the part of the international community.
But a cooling off period, even that seems going to be difficult to achieve at the moment. Aren't there going to be likely scores trying to be settled at this point?
Absolutely. That's why we need a significant and a concerted presence by the international community here under the auspices of both the United Nations and the Organization of American States. The United States and France and some of the larger Latin American countries need to come together and develop a serious plan for putting in some peacekeeping and forces of order in Haiti and helping this country get back on its feet.
But doesn't that imply that essentially the international community would be running Haiti, at least for the time being?
They have to help Haitians run the country for some period in the foreseeable future.
Which Haitians?
They have to help, well, a representative sample of both the forces of Lavalas who supported Aristide, as well as the business elite, as well as the civilian politicians who opposed Aristide. All the major sectors need to come together and say, this can't go on. This is a disaster. We need to find some common ground. We're all Haitians. We should believe in a better future for ourselves. Let's get some basic principles. And the international community supports that. The international community will not run Haiti. It will help keep order, help keep them on track, begin to provide some assistance and build up assistance flows. So it'll be a joint effort of Haitians and internationals working together.
Are there, as we're again looking back to those examples of failed states that have at least in some respects recovered, and we just have a few seconds left in this segment of the program, but are there lessons to be learned? What works and what doesn't?
Well, the international community has to stay in place, has to go slowly, has to, like I say, build consensus. Don't just choose a few favorites, stick them into power, but try to get everybody in the society on board with the project.
Give me a for instance.
Well, in Sierra Leone, after the civil war there recently, the British came in and really worked hard to try to rebuild. This was a country almost as bad off as Haiti in terms of the fractured quality, the violence, and said, we have to get back together. We have to start working together between the rebels and the government, and managed to at least create a basic consensus and something to build on.
We're speaking with Thomas Carruthers of the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. When we come back from a break, we'll go on and explore further the questions about the situation in Haiti and what that country needs to stop the cycle of failed governments. And we'll start taking your calls, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is toTN@npr.org. We'll also be joined by Daniel Erickson of the Inter-American Dialogue here in Washington, D.C. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're discussing the removal of the Aristide government in Haiti. The president left the country yesterday. He is now reported to be in exile in the Central African Republic and will stay there for a few days, is what we're told. His eventual destination remains to be determined. What does Haiti need, though, to rebuild its civil and political structures in the aftermath of the Aristide government? Our guest is Thomas Carruthers, a director of the Democracy and Rule of Law Project at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. And joining us now is Daniel Erickson, an expert on Haiti, director of the Caribbean Programs at the Inter-American Dialogue here in Washington, and also with us here in Studio 3. Thanks very much for coming in. Nice to have you back.
Thank you for having me.
As we look at this situation in Haiti, how much of this is Aristide's fault, and how much of this how much of this is structural?
Well, I think a lot of it is structural. You have to understand that Haiti is a country that's 200 years old. For 100 and I guess 90 of those years, it was actually ruled by various dictatorships. The U.S. Marines took charge for some time in the early part of the 1900s. And then you had the first democratically elected president with Jean-Bertrand Aristide in 1990. However, the institutions of democratic governance never really took hold in Haiti. And as you were discussing earlier, there's also deep polarization in the society. The political party structure really doesn't function very effectively. And there's a great deal of politicization within the judicial system as well. And so it's a country where really nothing, none of the institutional elements that a democracy requires were ever in place.
I was curious, when President Aristide was in power, presumably he held the instrumentalities of the state, yet he also seemingly took advantage of these pro-Aristide militias, these gangs, if you will, to bolster his power, parallel structures throughout the society.
That's very correct. And Aristide actually abolished the Haitian military in 1994 when he came back into power. And since then, the main security apparatus within Haiti has been the Haitian National Police, which was developed with the assistance of the international community, numbering more or less 5,000 police officers. And as of 2000, direct aid was cut off to the Haitian police force. And Aristide, in essence, began to rely more and more on politically affiliated gangs to ensure his control.
Thomas Carruthers, as we look at this, the army had been a element of stability, I guess. It preserved the power of the state, certainly for many years in Haiti, yet it was also an instrument of instability. They were the people who overthrew Aristide back the first time.
It was a good idea to abolish the army. It had been a force of repression and done some pretty bad things, although the Duvaliers, the family of the Duvaliers who'd run Haiti from 1957 up to 1986, had relied on their own sort of private paramilitary forces. But the army was bad news in Haiti, and it was a good thing to take it apart. But unfortunately, Aristide didn't have respect for the idea of an independent police force, didn't really have much respect for the idea of independent, loyal opposition, or even somewhat feisty opposition. Position, and he politicized and corrupted a lot of the institutions that the international community tried to help build up in Haiti after the intervention in 1994.
Our phone number again is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and our email address is totn@npr.org. And joining us on the line from Oklahoma City is Lewis. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
How are you?
Very well, thank you.
Yes, we were on a missions trip in Haiti and on an orphanage, and I won't go too deep for the safety of the people there. But you had a complete meltdown in Haiti. Haiti has been experiencing this for many, many years, and ever since the president was put into power, everything was a concentration of wealth, where you had 150, 200 families controlling 99% of the wealth. The police were Gestapos. You didn't say anything against the government. The people are starving. There's nothing there. It's a complete meltdown. I mean, this president was getting ready to dedicate this country to Satan. I mean, voodoo and everything, Satanism, everything is down there, man. I mean, if you have never been there, a lot of these people you need to find out, have they ever stayed in Haiti? People like me and people who have been there and been with the people, we knew the era of revolution years ago. And when you have this extreme poverty and you have extreme repression, you know, even though it's a puppet regime maybe put in by the United States who lost control, this is gone, man. They have got to get something going on there where people have some kind of base. People there, if you've never been there, they sell water. There is nothing there. You've got 1% of the population that has 99% of the wealth. You have 90% unemployment in this country.
Lewis, when were you there?
I was there just in August.
Okay, thanks very much for the phone call. We appreciate it.
Yes, something has to be done. You have to get people working, and you know, this man is dedicating this country to Satan. I mean, I'm telling you, it's a one-way street. Go there sometime. see repression. That'll make your eyes bleed.
Okay, thanks, Lewis.
Thanks.
From his description, is first of all, is that demographic description accurate, that 99% of the wealth is in the hands of 1% of the population? You're talking about the divide between the haves and the have-nots. Daniel, is that right?
It's along those lines. I mean, Haiti has some of the most extreme income inequality in Latin America, and certainly there is a great concentration of wealth within a relatively small group of people. And the vast majority of Haitian people live in poverty, and it's the worst poverty in the hemisphere. It's twice as poor as any other country in Latin America. You have a life expectancy that's less than 50 years. You have a literacy rate that's less than 50%. And this is really dire, dire straits for many of the people who live there.
And Tom Carruthers, as you look at the situation, Lewis was saying, you know, they have nothing. Well, what do they have? Clearly, they have resources.
Well, this is a subsistence economy. You're right. Haiti has unfortunately suffered a lot of drain on its resources. For example, there's been a lot of deforestation in Haiti over the last 20 years, loss of topsoil that really makes basic agriculture difficult, which drives people into the cities, and you get these large urban slums. They've had some light industry because they're close to the United States and can make products, you know, because of the cheap labor and bring them back into the United States. But because you have bad infrastructure, bad ports, bad roads, bad communications, it's hard for investment to get going. So the things you'd expect in a small island economy, agriculture and light industry, neither of them have worked very well, which has led to the economic desperation that Dan mentioned.
And can I just add tourism? I mean, there's almost no tourist industry in Haiti, and every other island in the Caribbean is dependent on that as a source of income.
What does function in Haiti? Does electricity work? Do the phones work? Is there water distribution? Is there sanitation?
I would say, in my experience, having traveled to Haiti several times, I think everything that works in Haiti is managed entirely independent of the state. So, for example, if you go to a hotel, a company that has clean water, that has 24-hour electricity, it has its own water purification system, its own generators. But in general, no, you do not have effective social service delivery. One of the things that you saw when many of the missionaries were fleeing Haiti in the several days before Aristide's ouster is that it's actually the social service delivery system of the country. It's NGOs, it's missionaries like the gentleman who from out west who we just spoke with. And so this is really a fundamental piece of the puzzle, that you don't have a government with the capacity to deliver social goods. It can't even really tax the people as a source of revenue, or at least not very effectively. And as well, you really don't have a government that can project authority over the territory that it theoretically controls. You saw the state just withering away when this uprising began.
So, Tom Carruthers, there's no force of law, there's no police force, no legal system, nothing's working?
No, it's a drastic situation. It's really horrendous. We shouldn't lose sight of the fact here that just 10 years ago, the United States invaded this country and occupied it for a couple of years. And since we're in the middle of doing that in a couple of other countries, it behooves us to pay attention to the fact that we have a fiasco in our hands just 10 years after an American intervention in a fairly small and close to the United States, and in a sense a country that shouldn't have been as hard as it seems to have been, perhaps in some ways. And so I really think we have a huge responsibility right now to come forward with some significant ideas and commitment towards rebuilding the country properly this time. It's a neighbor of ours. We were in the country for 19 years in the early 20th century, and we have basic interests there of, you know, preventing flows of refugees, not having it become a haven for narco-traffickers and other things. So we really need to focus ourselves on the fact that it's not as glamorous in some ways as what's going on in Iraq and Afghanistan, but this is a human tragedy of major proportions.
Are there any other institutions, Daniel Erickson, that work in the country? What about, for example, the Catholic Church?
Well, the Catholic Church does play a role in the country. Although, as your caller pointed out, Aristide, one of the measures he took was actually to give voodoo equal status as Catholicism, as an official religion of Haiti, which caused some uproar within the community. But you do have some social institutions that work, but really civil society in Haiti is very deteriorated. International NGOs can be fairly effective there. But you also have a phenomenon in Haiti where much of the civil society is also very politicized. And in effect, some members of it are playing the role of the political opposition in the country. So it makes it a very difficult mix to really figure out what are the institutions, the social institutions that work.
Here's an email we got from Gunnel Fies. What Haiti really needs now is a long-term commitment from the international community to help Haitians rebuild their country. No election, he says, is possible now. We need a 5-year period before we should even think about organizing elections. Finally, it would be very recommendable to allow Haitians with double citizenship presumably he means with the United States, to participate in the development of Haiti because the brain of this country is, the brain that this country has is all over the world contributing to the success of America and Europe, and again, has what there is of a, you know, the management class, the brains of Haiti. Is it emigrated, Tom Carruthers?
Well, there was a huge outflow first in the 1960s in Haiti under the rule of Papa Doc, which was a really repressive and harsh rule. A lot of the Haitian educated elite, which was significant at that time, fled actually to Africa in some cases, to Europe and to the United States. Then there was a second wave really in the 1980s as Baby Doc, his son, who ruled equally badly, not quite as harshly, but equally badly, took the country further down. So there was a huge outflow of talent from Haiti, and some of it does need to be brought back in different ways, although that's not so easy. I mean, in Afghanistan, we've seen some Afghanis come back from abroad and try to contribute to the process of rebuilding. Hard to attract people to go back to a situation like that. Most of the work is going to have to be done by Haitians in Haiti now with international assistance, but we can't expect, it's a good idea, and we should try to figure out ways to encourage Haitians living abroad, the diaspora, but I don't think we can see that as a primary source of help for Haiti.
Let's get another caller on the line, and this is Isaac, who's with us from Eugene, Oregon.
Hi.
I'm
calling in to, I'd just like to know, what has the president of Haiti done to provoke the people or to make them mad enough to want to kick him out of office? I don't feel like that's really been explained very well.
Dan?
Sure. Well, there's several things that you'd have to bring up. The first is that Haiti had been embroiled in a political crisis since May of 2000, when there were legislative elections that his party won, and in some cases fraudulently. And then he came to power in November 2000 in an election that was boycotted by the opposition, that was rumored to have very low turnout. And so there's been a question of Aristide's legitimacy hanging over his entire second term. Second, the international community responded to some of the electoral fraud that was believed to have occurred by cutting off aid to the country. And Haiti, in a very real sense, is an economic trustee of the United States. It's highly dependent on foreign aid. That and remittances make up the bulk of the country's income. And so when he didn't have any international assistance, he really wasn't able to deliver on many of his promises, and many of his vows were broken.
Okay. Thank you.
Isaac, thanks very much. There are other economic powers in effect in Haiti, and those, of course, would be drug traffickers. How big a business is that, Tom Carruthers?
Unfortunately, it is big. Haiti is very conveniently located between the northern part of South America and the mainland of the United States. It's a good stopping point for both boats and airplanes that are making their way north. And the lawless quality of Haiti makes it easy for people to move around and to do things. So unfortunately, it has come to be an important transshipment zone. Now, of course, if we were to clean up the situation in Haiti, those people would move elsewhere, but they've certainly corrupted Haiti even further. They're a terrible influence on the government. They buy whatever they need to in customs and lawyers and judges and things like that. So they are a poison that has spread in Haitian society in the last 10 years.
Thomas Carruthers of the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. We're also speaking with Daniel Erickson, Director of Caribbean Programs at the Inter-American Dialogue here in Washington. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And if you'd like to join us again, our phone number is 800-989-8255. As you look ahead towards the future, it's a pretty bleak present that we're all painting, and we hear you, what you say, both of you, about the commitment of international community for years. But if you were suddenly asked your advice about what needs to be developed in the next 3 to 6 months, say, beyond the establishment of order, beyond humanitarian aid, which I'm sure is going to have to be resumed fairly quickly, what organizations would you try to rebuild? Dan?
Well, many institutions in Haiti need to be rebuilt, so there's several places to start. Obviously, you need some sort of security force, which you suggested. Also, I think in the judicial system that there was a real problem in the Haitian judiciary, and that did become so politicized under Aristide. And if there's ways to restore that type of integrity, then I think that would be essential. Another thing that comes to mind is the political party structure. What you've had in the past is basically a very disparate groups of opposition parties that don't have much in the way of popular support, and then the Lavalas movement founded by Aristide, which is now somewhat a shell of its former self. But I do think that you need to have some mechanisms for channeling the political conflict into a democratic process instead of taking it out on the streets, which is what has occurred over the last several weeks.
Tom Carruthers, same question.
Well, there's so much that needs to be done, it's hard to know where to start. I mean, first you have to get a handle on the finances of the country. So the Ministry of Finance, you'd have to take a very hard, and the central bank, you'd have to take a very hard look. I suspect they're not in a very good state. And then you need to link what little money the country has to local services and start seeing if it's possible to get garbage collection going again, basic health services, the distribution of food to particularly needy people, and basic welfare things. So you need to connect the national institutions like Ministry of Finance, central bank, and some of the other key ministries to the horrible reality that people are facing on the ground and start to show that these can work. That can't be done by a bunch of chaotic political elites yelling at each other about whose fault all this is. That's why we need a period of, in a sense, a caretaker unity government that tries to get some of the things going, while at the same time a political process is created in parallel where people have the chance in negotiating fora to sit and argue about all those other things, maybe move towards a constituent assembly that might involve writing a new constitution. So you need to do these two things at once. You need to get the state functioning, get some functionaries, some technical people working on that. At the same time, you create a political process, negotiating fora, and rebuilding a political process.
Now, we just have a couple of minutes left, but we're told at the moment talks are going on behind closed doors in Port-au-Prince between among various factions. Amongst the rebel factions, who, of course, some of their leads have unsavory pasts, unsavory histories, the political opposition, and American and French officials also involved as well. As you look at those, what signals are you going to be watching to see emerging from those talks as people come out and talk that might give you a clue as to which way things are going? Dan?
Well, one thing that comes immediately to mind is the inclusion of Lavalas leaders in a transition government. I think if you do have a government that's composed entirely of the opposition or opposition rebels, God forbid if they are part of that scene, then that does indicate that instead of having a government of national unity, you're actually headed into greater polarization. I also think that the bottom line when it comes to Haiti is it's a country that requires long-term nation building, and the international community, mainly the United States, isn't interested in that project. And that's a fundamental divide between Haiti's needs and what the United States is willing to provide, and that will continue to haunt the relations between the two countries unless a greater commitment of resources is made over a period of many years.
Yeah, Tom Carruthers, what we're hearing from the administration is brief commitment, if you could address that briefly.
How long is it going to take in Washington to rebuild the Wilson Bridge over the Potomac River? 3 years, 5 years, 7 years, 10 years?
Forever, I think.
And how long will it take to rebuild Haiti? We have to be serious about these things. We can't even build a new station in our metro system in less than 5 years, and we expect to go into Haiti in 2 or 3 years, as we tried to in 1994, and rebuild a country that was never built properly in the first place. It's not serious. So here's a chance for us to work with the French, who are actually willing to help out on this, try to rebuild a partnership there, by the way, and get other people, the Canadians, the Organization of American States, and say, let's do something right in our hemisphere. We all agree on the objective. Let's work together in a slow, serious, persistent, and real way this time.
Thomas Carruthers, thank you very much for being with us today. Thomas Carruthers, Director of the Democracy and the Rule of Law Project at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace in Washington, D.C. Also, thanks to Daniel Erickson, Director of Caribbean Programs at the Inter-American Dialogue in Washington. Both were here in Studio 3A. When we come back, a look at political reconstruction in Iraq. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.